Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Peace. You know what it is. It's your man, SKYZOO, Skyzoo, live out the borough. And you are now watching the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. Let's get into it, baby.
Hard to Tell podcast episode 128. Dexter Henry, Brian Fonseca, still home quarantining, and we got another friend. This is the second person I think in the last couple of weeks we've had from down in Atlanta join the podcast.
Ooh,
except I don't want to put Atlanta on his name. He is a Brooklynite through and through.
So is the other person
who's here. That is true. Both people were from Brooklyn. But this guy's a Brooklynite through and through. My man Ben Couch. I've known Ben for quite some time. He is the director of editorial content with the NBA. We have very crazy connections of ties. How we actually finally met and came together
way back.
We had once spoken via email after college, and we finally met up at a mutual friend's birthday party years ago. So it was crazy.
Wow. Yeah,
but we knew of each other. Like Ben knows my cousin, and he knows.
I went to school with Monique for years.
Yep.
It was like middle school and high school.
Yep.
And so I knew of Dexter, and then we were both getting into sports, and then we both ended up at this one friend's birthday party, and that was and then we kept running into each other at work.
And then it was like I couldn't avoid Ben, which is not a bad Ben is not the person you want to avoid, so it's fine. Ben is good. Ben, how are you, man? How's everything down in Atlanta?
I'm good. You know, I'm living that quarantine life the way I think everybody is these days. You know, it has its ups and downs. But luckily, everyone happy and healthy right now. You know, so we're keeping our social distance as we go. things are a little weird. I have an NBA job. There's no NBA.
Right.
There's no any of the sports. I drafted a fantasy baseball team this year that is not playing games.
Me too.
So, you know, the whole thing's kind of a trip, but, you know, we're hanging on. Luckily, the situation's stable. And, you know, this Last Dance has really picked up and, like, filled the gap. You know, Dex, I've talked to you a little bit about that over the course. And it's dope to see everybody just, like, jumping on and, hey, the NBA community's still a thing, you know, and it's fun.
Yeah, Brian and I have absolutely been enjoying it. We've been having somebody on here every week to talk about it. I know you were telling me about how much you liked it. I know Brian has been enjoying it too. Brian, I'm going to let Brian take it from here because Brian has some very high praise for these last two episodes that we're going to talk about, episodes 7 and 8. Brian, share with the world what you shared with me.
Yeah, so they got into a couple of the things that I really wanted to know about that I pretty much talked about on the last episode where it's like, all right, the baseball stuff, like how did all that get going? You know, obviously, like I was born in 94, so I was born and just an infant in the year that he walks away, decides to pursue baseball, actually has a pretty decent minor league season when you actually go through the numbers, considering he hadn't played baseball 14 years prior to that, actually hit 200, was fourth on his team in RBIs, and a team that actually had some prospects that ended up playing in the major leagues, according to Terry Francona, who was his manager, which I didn't know that either. I was like, oh, wait, Terry Francona is a very familiar face as somebody who watches baseball. You know what I mean? So, and also Michael Jordan, very good base stealer, apparently, as well. Yeah. He had a lot of stolen bases in AA, too, which led me down the rabbit hole briefly of, look, I understand that he's become the greatest basketball player ever. However, it makes me think if he'd gone down the baseball route, and if that's what he was able to do after 14 years of just, you know, and he was getting better, working hard at it and things of that nature, if he just would have went straight baseball, it leads me to believe that he probably would have been a perennial all-star because he's Michael Jordan. Now, how could you bet against him? So yep. There was that. And then also, you know, the whole thing about his father and just overcoming that, because I've known about that obviously for a long time. And, you know, having seen like a whole bunch of other Michael Jordan stuff before this, you know, that's something that has registered with me and just how he overcome that. Like the clip of him crying after he won, I think it was the first championship after his father passed, was in 96 when they beat the Seattle Sonics, who we actually talked about in our last episode on our Back to the Future series. And that was his fourth title total, but his first championship since his father died. And he's, you know, crying with the title down and whatever. I never heard the audio for that. I've only seen the video, and I don't think that I thought he was crying before that. I kind of thought that he was just, you know, celebrating with the title, maybe even relieved or whatever the case may be, but I've never heard the audio. So that was something interesting too. And at the end of episode 7, where he just, you know, where he just tells the production to cut, I thought that was pretty cool. I thought that was pretty badass.
It was, man. These episodes had a lot. 7 and 8. Ben, what did you really take away from this episode? I know we talked about how for us we kind of lived through it as young people. But was there anything shocking to you? Anything that was revealed to you in this episode you didn't know?
Yeah, yo. So you know, Brian mentioned that moment where Jordan was sobbing on the floor, and like, that's one of those hidden moments from this footage stash. Like, nobody had seen the combo of the audio and video of that moment that long ever, right? Like, and, you know, that's where we're getting into the NBA entertainment hidden footage aspect of this. And that hit me in the chest, bro. Like, that was tough. Like, you know, because that was on Father's Day.
Yes.
Right?
Right. Like, yeah, that's a good point.
To, you know, when Jordan was like, the glove wasn't nothing, you know, like, to be realizing that was what was on his mind when he said it was something else. Like, you know, that's a lot.
Yeah. I think I always knew, I remember watching that game, and I remember watching the interview post game with Ahmad Rashad. I remember him talking about the emotion of what it meant on Father's Day. But I think watching that as however old I was, 11, 12, something like that. And I'd seen that footage, like Brian said, of him crying in the locker room, although I didn't think he was crying. I thought it was more of like he was so exhausted from having reached a mountaintop. And I do think that's part of it too. But when you hear the crying in the audio, it shows you the overwhelming emotion of what he dealt with after having lost his parent. I believe that would have been the second Father's Day without his dad, and the first time he had one playing basketball and his dad wasn't there to see him win. So, you know, that hit me in the chest too, you know, watching this yesterday on Mother's Day, having recently lost my mom. Mm-hmm. If someone who's lost their parent, it was like, wow, okay, this man still had to refocus himself and come back and get to this goal. And it was like, you're happy for him, but you felt all that as well too.
Yeah, and then like there were a couple other thoughts that I had just sort of watching those parts was, I never knew about the LeBradford Smith thing, but I loved it. Because I'm a proponent of, look, sometimes when you need some motivation, you could just make up something to piss yourself off.
Now, hold on. Hold on a second.
You got to keep that edge. You got to keep that chip on your shoulder.
1 second. I have a question for everybody. Not really Brian. Brian kind of doesn't count this. So it's really a question for you, Ben. Ben, had you heard of LeBradford Smith? Because I never heard of LeBradford Smith. Even as
really?
An NBA. No, I never heard of LeBradford Smith.
I just assumed, like, you know, as a diehard basketball. All right. He was never an NBA Jam or anything like that, so it makes sense.
It vaguely rang a bell.
Okay.
But when it was this story, I was like, oh, I know this anecdote. I didn't know it was that dude. And then I was like, it's such a typical Michael story. It's like he's taking a moment and then it comes out years later. Like, all you had to do was ask David Aldridge and DA would have told you I was with LeBradford Smith the whole post game. He never said nothing.
It's a testament to how just psychotically competitive. I'm just going to make up a word there that Michael Jordan is. I wouldn't even say was, but still seems to be, because he's not really, you know, showing Gary Payton and Isaiah Thomas and any of these other dudes a whole lot of respect throughout this. Man. So he still carries that with him. So, which I find interesting. I've heard some people say, like, you know, they feel like he could be miserable now. Like, it's kind of because he's so rigid even still, like he hasn't really let go of any of that. And I think, you know, that just kind of makes him who he is. I'm not sure that's how I would want to exist necessarily. Like, even me as somebody who is super competitive, but I ain't like that. You know what I mean?
What did you guys make of the fact that he laughed at when they showed him that they brought the iPad to him and he's watching the comments from Payton, and
Payton played a good defensive game on him
and he just laughed and as if he just dismissed him like he was nothing.
So at first I thought he was just like, oh, chuckles, like, oh, GP. But then I was like, oh, he's laughing at him. Like, this is serious. He's, like, really going in.
I thought the same thing.
And I was like, oh. And then he was, like, rolling. And I was like, yo, he cannot hold this back. He still feels this way about this man, you know, 20 years on. Like, whoa.
Did anybody see Ahmad Rashad's tweet about Gary Payton? Nobody saw this? Ahmad Rashad tweeted that Michael Jordan told him that after game one of that finals in 96 – that Gary Payton asked for sneakers.
Oh,
yeah. I did see that. And that's what he knew that he had them or whatever. Yeah. Which is, that's actually surprising to me, even though he is
Gary Payton doing that.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm getting at, because Michael Jordan's got some MJ in him. I actually think that if they were teammates at any point in the 90s, that they would have got along swimmingly, or they would have butt heads and it would have went terribly wrong. There's no in between with that, you know? Yeah. So
also, we also have to remember to go back to what Ben said as well too. Hey, this is what MJ told Ahmad Rashad. That doesn't necessarily mean
that's
it really happened though, right? Like, it doesn't mean that one thing we learned from this part 7 and 8, it doesn't mean it really happened. This could be LeBradford Smith all over again. That's all I'm saying.
Have any of you ever done that? Have any of you ever just made something up to sort of psych yourself out, kind of like what MJ did with the LeBradford Smith thing? Because I've definitely done that before.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's like that explicit that I made up an anecdote I told somebody.
Yeah,
right. But like, you know, look, you got to be competitive to have a level of success in any niche field, right? We're all in sports, you know, and like, I've had moments where I felt a boss took something I did and like disrespected it in whatever way, you know, I took that. And I'm like, I'm going to do so good. He has to come to me with compliments next time.
I've done that last year.
Like, none of that happened out in the world, but like in my head, that was going and driving me the next time.
Brian is all about this. You know, this is all Brian.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of a specific example right now, but if you just give me a little bit of time, I could compile a list and we can make a whole episode and just go through them.
speaking of lists with Brian, you don't want to know about that.
Yeah, that's true. I have a legitimate list.
Brian has a legitimate revenge list. We'll call it that.
Yeah.
I've made it not on the list as far as I know. So Ben, for all I know, you could be on the list. I mean, we don't know.
Y'all are probably in good shape if you got through 128 episodes. Yeah, or it's really waiting to get you.
Oh, listen.
Hey, don't laugh, Brian. You could be making a long plot here, a long con. How do I know you're not trying to set me up?
No, because that takes way too much work. And look, I'm all about hard work and stuff, but that's a little
excessive. Brian's going to be like, bow, 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 bow.
Got you, Dex.
Only if it was part of a wrestling angle. Then that would make sense.
Oh, my God.
Because that would be for entertainment purposes only, and that would be fun. I've already told you that I think I could be a great bad guy manager in wrestling. I really do.
I want to see him in wrestling.
I'm still young enough where I can make that, where I could pull that off.
You probably could. Ben, I take it you do not watch wrestling.
Off and on. Oh. I was a
They just got their lowest rating ever recently. Monday Night Raw did. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a subscriber to the WWE Network for like a year recently.
Okay.
Oh, I still have it.
Yeah.
That's great. They did legit.
I realized I wasn't doing it with the kids and stuff, but
that's true.
You know, there was a stretch I was keeping up pretty good. You know, I enjoy it, right? Like, the thing that really caught me in was the whole Becky Lynch, the man at the same time as the Kofi Kingston ride.
She just announced she's pregnant, like literally today. Literally, yeah. While we're recording this, she just announced she's pregnant.
Oh, right. Yeah. I got the tease from the app. That's dope. because her and Seth are like the big power couple and stuff. But I love it. Like I was in when I was a kid. Like I can remember a summer camp, like Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine.
Yo, right? I remember that.
They still do the 500 every August.
Yeah. I can't even remember this dude's like last name for the life of me, but it was like me and this kid Kevin were like the experts, and we had the tip sheets and like.
Yep. That was me
back when. So it's always been like in the background. Like I'll still always read stuff, or I'll, you know, the news will filter into my feed, and whatever I'm following. But now I appreciate a good heel turn.
I had my last dance with wrestling a while ago, a long, long time ago. But back to the last dance. Speaking of that. So I found the Gary Payton stuff. I found that wildly hilarious. Just looking at how much Jordan mocked the situation of him. And that, anything else, that stood out for you guys? Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
I just want to say this on Gary Payton, right? This is like prime, like we're going to have to explain this to somebody in the documentary is like how you get into it. But like that Sonics team was good, bro.
Yo.
Like Gary Payton was that dude, and Sean Kemp was like dunk. Sean Kemp, I maybe like have never seen anybody dunk harder in a game.
Yeah,
right. No. And I'm saying that remembering myself via Ted, but like the hot rumor with Sean Kemp was like he dunked so hard in a street ball game, sparks flew off the net.
You know, I remember that. I remember hearing that.
It's before Twitter. Like, you don't know.
And nobody can verify this.
Right.
I believe it though. I believe it.
Yeah.
No. That was something I forgot who was saying in the documentary. He was talking about how good that Sonics team was. And we just did that in a recent episode where we looked at how good that Sonics team was. They were really good, and they were really good defensively. I think the shock was in that series was that the Bulls went up 3-0 on them. Nobody saw that happening. Mm-hmm. Then they win the next two, and then they lose the final one. But that was a good Sonics team. So it wasn't like you could just dismiss them like they were nobody.
I pulled up the Scotty Pippen MVP, almost MVP season from 93-94, and he was third in voting.
Yep.
And I found it very interesting that was covered even a little bit more than I thought it would be. I thought it would be like a little footnote, but I actually was glad that they got into it a little bit and about how, you know, I forgot who it was, but Phil Jackson's what?
I know.
I forgot who it was. Was it Phil Jackson's, like the author of his book or whatever, that he basically said that he thought that was Phil Jackson's best coaching job ever? Was that a common narrative at that time? Was that something that was actually going around?
No, I mean, they were lauded for how well they played. I remember that. I remember even that year as a Knicks fan, as a young Knicks fan, I remember being like, wow, I was surprised they were as good as they were because they lost Jordan, they lost Grant. I think that year they finished like third in the East, if I'm not mistaken, remember.
55 wins.
It was way higher than I think most people expected. A lot of people thought they were going to be a playoff team, but probably like a sixth seed or something, and they totally exceeded expectations. Like everybody thought they were going to take a hit. If you read any publication before that season, and I used to buy these magazines and all the stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody had him picked like fifth, sixth. It was nobody had him higher than that.
Oh, but so they still had him as a playoff team.
Though. Yeah. People still had him as a playoff team.
On the low end.
Yeah, because people still were like, look, Pippen's good and the role players were pretty good. And
Kukoc was just coming over.
He was really the wild card. But look, nobody thought they'd compete as good as they did. And they still took the Knicks to 7.
Like, they did, yeah.
And it was the foul on
Hugh Hollins Pippen. Blowing the whistle, swallowing the whistle.
Right. With Hubert Davis?
Yeah.
Carolina guy?
Hubert Davis. Yeah, your Carolina guy. There you go. That's right.
That's right.
Brian, you didn't think they were going to get into it at all with the Pippen stuff?
I thought that was something that was going to be just glossed over because, I mean, this is the last dance and this revolves around the 97-98 season, but this revolves more around Michael Jordan than anybody else. I've actually thought that they've done a pretty good job of, you know, sort of giving us, like, who Scottie Pippen was and how important he was. And then also the Dennis Rodman stuff. I mean, that's a little harder because he just had, you know, a full like 30 for 30, you know, on him last year. So I think that they would want people to reference that. But, you know, to get into the Dennis Rodman stuff, it's actually very basic at, you know, to do it at face value. And then after that, you could sort of peel back as many layers as you want. Horace Grant, I feel like, is not getting talked about enough. Like, he's being talked to, and we're getting a lot of BJ Armstrong, which I find interesting, but he's actually a good interview. But, the Horace Grant thing, I was looking at his career numbers yesterday, and I'm like, I think we should be talking about this dude a little bit more, about his contributions and things like that. I know he had career years in Orlando, but, you know, he was very good with the Bulls before he even went there.
Yeah, no, he was.
Much of that, I think, is, you know, Jordan's gravity, right, to use the term we use now, mm-hmm. as a player just kind of sucked the whatever system was happening to him. You know, like we're talking about Pippen, like people didn't realize how good Pippen really was until it was the combination of the Dream Team, like where everyone was like, oh, this dude really should be playing with these guys. And then two, Jordan's not here and this team is legit. Like they came very close to knocking off the Knicks team that everyone thought was going to be the one that won the championship until, you know, all the things happened that happened that year. And we're not going to talk about
Yeah, let's get away from that before Dexter has an aneurysm. Yeah.
No, I'll be fine. I'm over it. I'm not still holding on to things like Michael Jordan. I'm over it. Well, I do want to ask
about that actually too.
Yeah. Well, before we get to that, one thing about Scottie Pippen, I want to ask both of you, especially you, Brian. I'm intrigued what you have to think about this, and Ben. When you look back, and they did touch on Scottie Pippen not coming into that game, that game three in the series against the Knicks, where Kukoc hits the game winner. Because Phil Jackson had drawn up the play for Tony Kukoc and not Scottie Pippen. I think in today's social media age, guys, Pippen would get roasted and slammed for that. Now, he did at the time. He just didn't feel the pressure the same way. Do you, Ben, look at that? Did you look at that badly as a 10-year-old kid? Are you still looking? Did you still frown upon that now? What do you think about how everything went down?
So, like, yeah, there's like the levels of how you can think about this, right? There's like, how did it hit me at the time? I was a Knicks fan, right? Like, Scottie's not playing on the play. We're in good shape. Like, we'll take it, right? Like, Scottie's not coming out. All right, let's see what happens. And then Kukoc hits a shot and wins. You know, somebody made the good counterfactual. Like, what happens if Kukoc misses that shot? Even if Scottie is in. Like, Phil's getting roasted for, you know, his dude who had the MVP season finally.
And how does that make Scottie look? If that were to happen, what do you guys think?
If he had missed it?
If Kukoc misses it.
That's the thing. If Scottie just goes out there, right, inbounds the ball and Kukoc misses, Scottie looks like the best guy in the world because everyone's like, oh, Scottie should have taken the shot. Right? And that's the history of it is, right? And if Scottie's in there and he inbounds and I saw somebody say he was the best inbounds passer on the team at the time and he's got the height, like that's why Phil wanted him in. Like, if he makes that pass and Kukoc gets the shot and wins, Scottie, the ultimate selfless player, he's done all these years against Mike, he's letting Kukoc get his, and the Bulls just keep winning, right? You know, so what happens is Scottie decides to sit out because, yo, that hurts. Like, you're the dude, finally, and he took it away from you in your moment. Like, this is your chance. Like, let me go down shooting, coach. Like, this is it.
Yeah,
you know, I get the instinct, but as a team player, you know, like you heard everyone in the documentary was like, that was no good. Like Bill Kerr crying in the locker room.
Yeah,
right. And I love the way Steve Kerr put it, where he lent voice to that's not his character. That's why it sucked the most. And I love that he worded it that way, because that's sort of what I thought about. Because the way, like, I've sort of read up on Scottie and have learned about Scottie through the years. Scottie Pippen is my brother's favorite basketball player, so he's somebody that I've grown up watching throughout the course of my life as well. And, yeah, that didn't seem to be something that he would do. That seemed like something Michael would do. You know what I mean? That seemed like something Kobe would do. It seemed like something that Shaq would do.
Except those guys are absolutely getting the ball in that situation.
Yeah. But the thing is, with Scottie Pippen, you know, it wasn't his character. So I found that very interesting. And just also, like, I thought, you know, what if Kukoc missed it? Or, you know, what if Scottie Pippen is there and misses the shot himself? Like, what if he actually gets his way? You know what I mean? And Phil Jackson actually cracks, which he wouldn't. He didn't, obviously. Right. And then Scottie Pippen misses a shot. Then how does that look? You know what I mean? What happens in the series from that point on?
So here's the thing for me. I think there's something to a coach knowing which players are ideal for the certain situation. And, like, I would always want to give the ball to my best player, but I understand where Phil Jackson was coming from. It was like, look.
It was a good basketball player.
This guy had hit 3 game-winning shots during the season. Tony Kukoc was a guy who played well under pressure. And stepped up, and he believed he could make the play, and he did. It's not necessarily a slight to Scottie Pippen, but I understand, like Ben said, I understand why Scottie Pippen felt slighted, because this was his chance to be the dude, and your coach is kind of telling you he's not the dude. The thing I kind of looked at in that situation, I looked at Phil Jackson, and I was like, damn, when he realized Scottie wasn't playing, what did he say? Two words. He said, fuck him. And I was just like... I was like, wow, Phil Jackson was really in control here. He was like,
Steve Kerr saying was dope.
Yeah, he was like, nah, this is exactly what we're doing here, and I believe in it. And it almost made me think, well, that's why the team, Steve Kerr, Bill Cartwright, these guys, they got right behind their coach and was like, nah, that's not acceptable. And let's give Scottie Pippen some credit.
Yeah.
From what you heard from these players, Scottie Pippen was a man, said that he was wrong immediately, and they were able to move on, and that probably helped them really get back into the series. So I know what Scottie did was wrong, but I also have to give him credit that he stepped into the locker room in the fire with his teammates, and he was an adult about it. And he said, look, this is what he is, and I'm sure him and Phil talked it out, and they were fine after that.
Yeah.
And he made a mistake, and, you know, he moved on. Like, I'm not going to kill him, but I get it.
Agree. And he got past it, and then the very next game they show the highlight where he dunks on Ewing and wants to teabag him. So it's like, you know,
you keep bringing up the old wounds, man.
Yo, but that was a great dunk. Like that was such a fuck you dunk. Like
it was something.
Like
it was something. Yeah. Don't just say that. It was something.
The Sports Walk is back. Watch Season 3 of Backpack Broadcasting's original web series that brings you the opinions of real sports fans. The first two seasons and current season are available now for viewing on the Sports Walk YouTube channel and Facebook page. Check out the 2017 NYC WebFest official selection and see what other sports fans have to say on the hottest issues in sports today. It's easy. Just take the Sports Walk.
One of the other things I wanted to ask you guys, because I found the sort of narrative on social media very interesting going around about Michael Jordan's mentality, right? Yeah. And I knew that once they would talk about it in the documentary, how obsessed he is with winning, that a lot of people on social media would be like, yeah, you know, I want to be that, or I want to be with that guy, whatever, whatever. When most people, I would probably even go as far as to say 80, 85% of people, they're not built to be around somebody like that. They're not really built to be around a psychotic winner like that. And in the equation of Michael Jordan versus Steve Kerr, a lot of people think they're Michael Jordan when they're really Steve Kerr. And that's fine, because 99% of people are Steve Kerr terms of like...
Steve Kerr, don't diminish him. Steve Kerr went at him. He deserves some credit.
No, but that's what I'm getting to. I'm saying that if they were either one in the equation, that's who they would be. But most people wouldn't even get that far. Most people would probably just turn and be like, look at the way people are now with basic things like teamwork and things of that nature. Like, it's just a different time where a lot of people wouldn't be able to handle Michael Jordan. Gerard gave me props. Gerard Hector, friend of the show, gave me props. He said, you could be teammates with Michael Jordan on Twitter. He was saying this about me because he thinks that I'll bark back at him. And I would. Look, if you're going to lose a fight, just go down swinging. You know what I mean? Don't run away from it.
That's fair. That's like, fair. That's
like, I've definitely got into it with teammates over stuff before. You know what I mean? Like, it happens. And I think, you know, I give Steve Kerr obviously a lot of props for, you know, being a dude, especially as a white dude, you know, to stand up to Michael Jordan in that situation. Not a lot of people want to do that. You know what I mean?
And he was that dude. Ben, do you think that anything that we see in this documentary about, to what Brian's talking about how Jordan is, changes your perception of his character? Because it doesn't for me.
And Jordan warned us. He said that he thought a lot of people would come away from just hating him, and I don't think that there's really anything, at least for, you know, for us, where we're gonna look at him then in that way.
I mean, here, like, where I think I have fallen out on this, right, is one, it reinforces a lot of the image we have, and like Michael, who, you know, is apparently very concerned with his public image, right, like is out there worried about how people will perceive it when they see all of it, you know, as opposed to just what was coming out at the time. You know, we got the Jimmy Butler practice tweeted minute by minute, you know, from Woj, like within the hour. And
he only took one shot. He still maintains to this day he only took one shot that
round. Third stringers. It wasn't even the second. But it's like the one thing Brian said that is very true is like that was Michael Jordan, and most people are not Michael Jordan, right? If you are not one of the, if not the best basketball players of all time, right? Like there's no question, you know, top three, and it's really a argument of who else with Mike, right? You want to put in there.
Yeah.
Right? If you're not that dude, you don't have that much leash, right? Kerr said that, you know, in the teaser, he was like, basically something to the effect of like, you know, I have irrational confidence, but I'm not usually talented enough to back it up.
Right.
And it's like, if you're not Michael Jordan and you act that way and you can't back it up by being the hardest working, the best.
Then you're Ricky Davis.
Right. Or, you know, whoever to name anybody. Go for your own rebounds on the triple-double.
But that's the thing. A lot of people think that like a lot of people, most people, you know, have egos and so on and so forth. Like they see themselves in that light when really, you know, it's not the case. And I feel like this documentary should showcase that. Like this, of all the people that have all this confidence in themselves, and I feel like people should, there's a very small percentage of people that could back it up. And it's not always talent based. A lot of hard work comes with that as well. And, you know, obviously Michael Jordan is going to be able to get away with that. Steve Kerr, to some degree, is going to be able to get away with that because even being Steve Kerr is very, very difficult. You know, even getting to that level of whatever your profession is.
Yeah. So I wouldn't even say it's a matter of confidence, right? Because people should be confident. You got to be confident to be Steve Kerr, to go back at Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
But it's that ability to like lead by bullying, right? Which is essentially what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah.
Like, yo, the way he was going at Scott Burrell, like blowing up his spot on the team playing while they're playing cards, you know, everyone, the meme of the disrespectful, like look over his shoulder when he was posting him up already went around.
Which was great. I posted it.
But it's like unless you are at the super talented, you know, ultra elite level, people aren't taking that from you. Right. Because you're just going to burn all your bridges otherwise. And nobody's going to give you the second chances, you know, when it goes sour. Right. Like if you blow up with someone else who's, you know, at a more elite level than you in a situation, you know, you pop off on your boss the wrong way and you don't got the standing to back it up. You know, so that's the thing that people have to keep in mind. And like the other piece of it is like that's not the way you have to do it. Right.
That's
We've seen so many other examples like. I think Tom Ziller, who writes a great newsletter, Good Morning, Let's Basketball, you know, was saying like Tim Duncan, Steve Kerr as a coach,
right?
Phil Jackson as a coach. You know, there's you look at the whole list of people that have won in the NBA and won in sports. Not everybody does it like this.
Right.
And people can be highly successful.
Right. There's many there's many different forms of leadership. I said that as a guest on another podcast. There's many different forms of leadership, which is why I don't kill Michael Jordan. I think Michael Jordan led the players the way he thought was the best to get them to what they need to do. Ben, I completely agree with you. You can be an asshole and get away with it if you're really, really, really damn good and you get results, right? Like, that's the key thing. It's so much that the people know that you're an asshole, but they're like, no, we still believe in this guy, so we're going to follow him, right? Like, no, and they know the results work. So I think the Judd Bushlers, the Bill Wenningtons, the Luke Longleys, the Steve Kerrs of the world, they respected him. This, even Scott Burrell, who was a talented player coming out of college, they still respected what he brought to the table. And I think the thing I looked at, you didn't feel like any of those dudes hated them. They looked at him and was like, no, we know what he's doing. We know why he's being like this. He's not being like this just to be like this.
Right. But they wouldn't also probably have him on speed dial.
Yeah. They're not calling him up to hang out.
Like maybe that's not the life Mike wants to live.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the way some other people want to live. And like a lot of people don't think about that trade-off.
Yeah,
that's true.
Like, even when I look at Michael Jordan's like house and, you know, the different places that he's doing these interviews, I don't get the sense that there's a lot of people in that building. You know what I mean? I get the sense that he's just kind of there most of the time because that's, you know, that's just Mike being Mike. I think the other important thing to note is that the reason why he can also get away with these things and he lent voice to this in the documentary is that he's not really asking dudes to do things that he wouldn't do himself. You know what I mean? And I think that's very important in terms of his leadership style, really any leadership style, because you want to lead by example also. And a lot of people use lead by example as a cop-out to be like, nah, I'm just not vocal. I just want to lead by... No, like, leading by example means you have to... Yes, you have to be...
Damn.
Oh, man. Not who I was thinking of when I didn't think of anybody in particular, but... Right. No.
I know you weren't, because you're Carmelo.
Carmelo Anthony's half Puerto Rican. You know what I'm saying? Like, I leave him alone.
I'm on Team Melo.
You know what I'm saying? But what was it? But
was with all the leadership in the locker room.
Yeah. But when it comes down to it, I think leading by example, a lot of people use it as a cop-out because they're afraid to go at people in that way. They're afraid to sort of take the Michael Jordan approach to feel like they're overbearing, you know, the Kobe Bryant approach and things of that nature, where I think that most people, like, you know, leading by example is not just in action. It's also in words. I feel like it's also be like, look, I'm going to do this and I believe you can do the same thing. So let's do it together.
I think there's also the point in a player that made me think about that Ben brought up in Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan is kind of known as this very quiet guy, right? But that doesn't mean that he wasn't telling people that what they needed to do. I think people confuse the two sometimes. Like, being publicly vocal doesn't mean that you're not vocal at all. Those are two different things. Like, I can say in a very different demeanor, like, hey, Ben, you need to do this, or I think you need to come here on time. And that's still leadership. Yep. That's still, to Brian's point, you still need to be able to exercise that. Just because you don't do it demonstratively or you're not in the Kobe Jordan way of doing it doesn't mean that you're not vocal with your leadership. So,
you can be vocal and not a dick.
Right.
That's basically what you're saying. Right. You know what I mean? Like, that's basically it at the end of the day. Yeah, Ben, you were about to say something. Yep.
Because, like, you know, as somebody who has taken on managerial roles in my career, right? Like, as I've progressed, one of the things I've struggled with is, like, I have an innate, like, want for people to like me, right? Mm. And, you know, generally, I carry myself in a way where that's not an issue at all. But, like, you can't have that be the dominating, you know, attitude in every moment when you're somebody's boss.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Because being the boss means taking on the responsibility. So, like, one of the things I've realized I had to, like, you know, work through some internal chafing on was, you know, you can't just not tell people and not communicate and take it on yourself. Right. Because if you're taking it on instead of giving someone the advice to correct it and do it themselves, and even if they're only going to do it to 75% of what you can do. Right. If they're spending 100% of their time on that 75% and you're spending 0% of your time on it and it still gets done, that's the job. Right. Like, you know, and that's bringing things along, and people don't want to be in that, you know, to Brian's point, like, about people don't want to be that person who's like correcting people. Right. And firing off a note in the middle of the Slack like, yo, you spelled, you know. You know, whoever's name wrong in a headline, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you got to just be able to do that in the moment and not have it be a thing.
Yeah.
Right. Because I'm correcting you because I saw this and I want it to be correct, not because you did it wrong.
Right. Right. It's not personal. It's just me doing my job and delegating and saying what needs to be done. Right. But that's part of leadership. That's good. I guess the
Tim
last
Duncan, assistant coach, by the way.
That's right. I guess the last thing would be we are at the last parts, the last two parts of this documentary. I feel like it's blown by. We all waited for this. We couldn't wait for it. We were so hyped. And now we're down to the last two parts. What are you guys looking forward to seeing the most in the last two parts of this documentary?
More replays of the dunk by John Starks.
Yeah. Yeah, I want that too, but that ain't happening.
One moment, bro.
Do you have the poster, Ben? Did you have the poster up in your room?
Yeah.
Me too.
I was referencing, like, so my room growing up in Brooklyn had this ugly wallpaper. It was like a dark, like, blue and brown fleur-de-lis like thing. And, you know, the house I grew up in is like over 100 years old. It's like in a Victorian flatbush. So I was like, I'm not doing this as a teenager, you know. So I covered the whole thing in posters, like magazine cutouts, like the whole deal. And the two centerpieces, I had Ken Griffey Jr.
Nice. That was my guy too.
Yo, this it was the most 90s poster of all time. It's called Riptide, right? And it's got Griffey swinging with like a tidal wave.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that one. Yeah.
Yo, wow. Yeah, iconic Griffey poster for people of a certain age. So I had that, and I had the dunk was on the other side of the wall. Like, those were the big two.
that's a good one. You want more? I don't think we're getting more of the dunk, Ben. Unfortunately, we're not going to get that. Brian, what are you looking forward to seeing?
Just more stuff that I don't know, which, you know, is just a very general thing to say. But, you know, at this point, yes, the last two parts, I just want as many things that I've never heard, like more Le Bradford Smith stuff, more of Jordan's just personality. You know what I mean? And, you know, I kind of want to know about, because we're obviously going to get into the Bulls Jazz series at some point, especially in the last couple episodes, because this is where The Last Dance ends. I want to know about, you know, maybe was there a beef with Karl Malone that I don't know about? Was there any trash talking there? Because there were some games where Karl Malone missed critical free throws in that series. You know what I mean?
How about Karl Malone getting stripped before the iconic final shot? That's something that people don't talk about. They will talk about this.
Defense, offense.
Karl Malone with a chance to seal the game gets stripped by Jordan, and Jordan comes down and hit the shot. I think the major question, I think Ben will agree with me on this. Ben remembers this. After that shot, after they win the championship, what did everybody talk about at school the next day? What did everybody talk about, Ben?
That was a foul, bro.
Yep. Did he push him off? Did he push off or did he not? That's what I want to know. Yep. That's what we want to know. And here's the thing.
I mean, that would have been the same thing in this era. So that's great to know.
Oh, no. What the producers have to do here is you got to bring the iPad to Michael Jordan. You got to get Brian Russell, and bring the iPad to Michael Jordan. And I want Brian Russell to say that he absolutely pushed off. And I want to see Michael Jordan watch that. I want that reaction. That's what I want.
Anytime he gets the iPad, it's an instant meme, yo. Me and the others be looking at.
Ready?
your mic came out, Brian. I'm absolutely ready for it.
I was due. You know what I mean? Due. It was gonna happen.
This happens every episode. Every episode.
Every episode. It happens. I get a little too animated, and then my mic comes out. One more thing I do want to know about in these last two episodes, and I don't know if they're gonna get into it because this is The Last Dance, but I would like to know more about the retirement and then the playing basketball with the Wizards and that whole thing. Obviously, I know about it to some degree, but just, you know, to hear Michael Jordan talk about it today.
I think I'm intrigued if they do go into like his post career just a smidget and into ownership. I kind of would like, and where his Jordan brand has evolved into. That would be kind of interesting to me.
That'd be good for episode 10. I would love a Kwame Brown interview. I would love it.
That's a different doc.
That's a totally different doc. Yeah, that's a whole different doc. Oh man, I don't know if we're gonna get that, man. That's a totally different documentary, but we'll have to see
right now. But that book is got everything. Like, there's an awesome anecdote in there about, like, you know, how young and sheltered isn't the word, but like, just, you know, coming into the NBA as an 18-year-old from like a small town in Georgia is like a big jump. And like, Kwame got to his first like steakhouse and was like, "I would like French dressing," and they were like, "We don't have that, bro."
Wait, what? They don't have French dressing at a steakhouse?
Why?
I mean, I know that's weird, but like, yeah, I mean, because you could get like salad with your steak, you know,
like super high end, and like, you know, they've only got the vinaigrettes selection or whatever, you know, and like the owner at the table was like, "Oh, you gotta ask for this, like you really want, you know, whatever." You know,
look, Kwame Brown had a good long career. He just was the number one overall pick, so people think he's a bust. That's all I'm going to say.
Like, yo, but that's the thing, right? People, like, I have this argument with folks all the time, right? Like, if you're drafting a guy at number one, what you are trying to do is lock in a position for it before you have to think about it, right? Ideally, that guy is also changing your franchise.
Yeah.
Right?
But see, but that's not how people look at it, unfortunately.
Right.
They look at it the other way.
The thing is, like Andrew Bogut, when the Bucks took him with the number one pick in that draft over Chris Paul and all them dudes in 2005, right? Bogut locked down center until he like shattered his wrist or whatever, and Milwaukee could go about their, you know, future picking up the other pieces, right? Like, for that stretch of time. You know, that's a good number one pick. You know, Hasheem Thabeet going number two, right? Now, and that, totally bombing out. Right. That's a bad number two pick.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
But like getting a guy who starts for 10 years, like that's okay.
Yeah. If Kwame was the 10th overall pick, then people would have been like, ah, you know, we thought he'd be a little bit better, but he was fine. He lasted in the league 12 years. He had some good defensive metrics, you know, toward the end of his career where he was a productive backup center. But, you know, whatever. This ain't the Kwame Brown podcast.
Yeah. I mean, and he was also, it's also that he was the first high schooler to go number one.
Yeah.
Right.
And the other two were better right after him, even though one of them was better for a short amount of time.
Right.
Yeah. It's all circumstantial. Like, you only draft in the year you got.
Right. Right. A lot of it is circumstantial.
Yeah. Pau Gasol was three. That's the other thing.
Right. And trading.
And
traded. That's a favorite.
That's right. Yeah, so who knows? Crazy times in the NBA. Well, yeah. Ben, we hope the NBA comes back soon. Yep, you know, we miss it. I know you. I know you miss it, and I know you want to get back to work, and everything. Yeah. But thanks for coming on and talking with us about the Last Dance. We'll have to have you back probably when basketball starts back up again, so we can talk some crazy stuff and
celebrate.
One last question. Sorry to cut you off.
First time, long time.
One last question for you. Do you know where that John Starks poster is?
Oh,
because I have no. I think mine is somewhere in my parents' garage. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, I think that room got remodeled. Like the second I was out of college, my parents were like,
"Take this down."
They like keep my old football jerseys in the closet. That's all I got.
That's all you got. Yeah,
yeah. A bunch of Nintendo Power magazines in the basement, and that's about the long and short of it.
when you leave, your room is never your room anymore. That is true. Nice. All right, Ben. Thank you, man. Appreciate you joining us. We'll definitely catch you next time, brother.
Yeah, appreciate y'all. Keep doing what you do.
If you're a fan of the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast, and you know you gotta represent, and the way you represent is with the latest Ain't Hard to Tell podcast gear. You can get that at our T Public store, or you might just be a fan of Backpack Broadcasting's other original content, including the Sports Walk and Sideline Stories. With that being said, we had to let you know about a sale where you can get some great deals on the latest Backpack Broadcasting gear. That sale runs this week through May 15, 2020. Last chance to get the sale, and it's a flash sale where all regular t-shirts will be on sale for $13. Everything else in the Backpack Broadcasting store on TeePublic up to 35% off. A great deal for you to secure some great gear. Check it out today. Backpack Broadcasting TeePublic store.
One time for your mind.
A lot going on in the world this week. Brian, as usual, is angry about something.
I'm not angry this time. You might be angry after this, actually.
Will I? Okay, well, fine. Brian is going to make me angry, and this revolves around something I generally don't really care that much about, which is combat. Not combat sports, because I love boxing. UFC. But Brian's got something really, I guess he's going to make me angry. Make me angry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know if I am. We'll see. Because you've been down on the whole idea of sports coming back. But I think that, you know, UFC probably wouldn't bother you as much because it is the UFC after all. And as I try to explain to you.
I mean, I care about the people of the UFC. I don't want to make sense of that.
No, but what I'm saying is it's just a different world, man. Like, it's just a different world out there. So basically what's going on with the UFC is Dana White has been aggressively trying to put on UFC 249, which was actually originally scheduled to be at Barclays Center in April. So I'm actually bummed out about that part of this because I would have loved to see Khabib and Tony Ferguson fight one another. So they tried to make that happen and they were moving it around, kicking around the idea of using the UFC Performance Institute in Nevada, which is banned right now because in Nevada state, they're not allowing those kind of competitions, even though that is UFC, you know, property. Also, you know, Nevada's being, you know, sort of very responsible with what's going on right now. And what's happening is that Dana White, you know, he said that he has an island. He said that somewhere on earth, this fight's going to happen between Khabib and Tony Ferguson. Khabib is in Russia right now. He is Russian. He's from Russia. He's out in Russia and he can't leave. You know what I mean? He's banned from leaving. So They had to put in another opponent. And they find Justin Gaethje, who's been on a roll lately. And they actually figure out, after initially being told to stand down in April when they were going to do this from some mysterious island, Florida opens up because Florida is Florida. They go to Jacksonville. They take everybody down there.
It happened in Jacksonville.
Yes, this happened in Jacksonville.
What a shock.
Home of the Jaguars and Maria Fraschilla. And basically what happens is, you know, they administer, the UFC says, 1,200 tests for 300 people. So fighters, workers, staff, the whole deal, everyone was tested. Three came back positive. Ronaldo Jacare Souza, who was one of the fighters on this card.
Right.
Former contender. Well, he didn't compete for a title, but he was competing for, you know, sort of that next in line. Saw him at Madison Square Garden not that long ago as well. He was going to face Uriah Hall. Uriah Hall, originally out of Jamaica, Queens, both middleweights. Jacare recently fought at light heavyweight. So Jacare and his two coaches tested positive. Jacare lives in Florida. He drove up there, got there Wednesday. Everyone was tested, obviously. And he had told the UFC that prior that he has a family member that had tested positive for the virus. So, you know, in order to be like extra careful, whatever the case may be, Dana White says that he was pretty much isolated the entire time he was there. He did do the stare down with Uriah Hall, but they were like socially distant. He was distant from everybody, from what I could tell. I didn't really see him shake anybody's hand or anything like that. He was the only person that did the stare down on Friday after the weigh-in that had a mask and gloves. And Friday night, it came out that his test came back positive. So now he and the other two guys, his corner men, are both in isolation right now.
Let's stop there for a second.
Yeah, before I get into the actual fights and things like that.
I am mad. I am. I'm disgusted here. Here's why.
By the way, should I tell you about the part where Dana White says the system worked? If y'all can see Dexter's face right now.
No. Let's actually get into that part.
Dana White,
please explain, how did the system work?
Okay, so basically what he was explaining was that, look, of all the tests they were able to administer, and apparently they were assured that they weren't taking away tests from, you know, people, like regular people.
I don't believe that, but these leagues and these organizations will continue to tell people that it's not a good look. They'll say that, but I'm not buying that shit.
I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm just reporting what Dana White was saying. And what Dana White was basically saying was that they weren't taking those tests away. They administered all the tests. And the reason why he thinks the system worked is that, look, everyone else tested negative. They're the only three that tested positive. So they were able to figure that out. Now they're able to help them in isolation, you know, get them what they need and take care of them for 2 weeks while they're in Florida. He already lives in Florida. His team is out in Florida. So they're in isolation right now, which, I mean, numerically, yeah, I mean, you don't want anyone testing positive. But the fact that it was only three, which was actually, you know, pretty surprising. So there's that.
But here's the problem. The problem is, they didn't know we tested positive until after the weigh-in. The results didn't come back, right? I applaud them for doing the testing. But so it is possible that during the weigh-in, the day of the weigh-in, even though you saw him distancing for the stare down, even though he was wearing a mask, it is still possible that he could have infected somebody else.
Yeah.
It is possible.
That part we're going to find out.
Yeah. And that is what is risky. You can't have that right now. That's the problem, right?
All three people asymptomatic, by the way.
Right.
His corner man.
The most dangerous people with all of this are the asymptomatic people, which is why what would have been better to me is if they could have got the test results the day before the weigh-in, if it could have got planned to that, then you would have known who you needed to and bring in this facility before you do it any time. That would have been controlled. I'm going to say I understand the UFC is trying to do the right thing and get this up. Well, they're trying to make money. Let's just call it what it is. They're trying to make money here, and they're trying to keep the money train rolling. And they tried to actually have testing, but I think they fell short. The reason it didn't work to me wasn't a success. I wouldn't use that word.
Yeah.
Is you had somebody who tested positive, which you want to know. I get that point. But you had them around other people at the weigh-in.
Yeah.
And
I think that when it comes down to it, like, the first time anybody's going to be the ones to bring sports back, quote unquote, it's obviously going to be messed up. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be perfect. I think the UFC is going to get better at this, but I want to know what happens because they have another event Wednesday and they have another event Saturday. So there's tests going on probably. There's probably everyone's already probably been tested for Wednesday by the time this podcast drops. So what I want to know is what happens in the case. And we may not know this because this might not even happen, but what happens in the case where maybe 10 come back positive? You know, like what's sort of the line here? This is all fuzzy, and this is why nobody
wants
to be first.
Are you asking what's the number where they have to be like, we got to shut this shit down?
Yeah, like I don't know, or like I don't know what it is at that point. Like because in this case, there was only one fight that got affected and those three people. Now, we're going to know if – is it possible that because Uriah Hall was, while he was distant, was he close to him at any time, even in passing, that he gets infected and brings us back to whoever? Right. I don't know. So these are things that I think it's too early to say, but we'll see what happens. As far as the fight, it's the fights themselves. They were very interesting because obviously this was with no audience. There was no crowd. And look, for MMA, it really worked. I really enjoyed the no audience factor in it. Joe Rogan was pretty funny on commentary where he says, I don't understand because the announcers were all separated. There was one person here had a webcam, one person here, like they all had their different setup. But coming into the pay-per-view, they all had a three shot in front of a camera sort of standing together, which is weird. No masks, no gloves, none of that. So I was like, why are they, one, if they're all negative, do they need to be far apart? You know what I mean?
No,
I think if they're doing the stand up, shouldn't they just sit together? Because Joe Rogan's point was that, look, we all tested negative. So why do we have to, you know, sort of be apart here? And I'm looking at that and I'm like, yeah, I kind of agree with him. If everyone's negative, then
my thing with the testing negative and when those results came in, it's about what have you done since then? Like, and also, how often were they testing? Are they testing people? They're not testing them every time they go back in the building. So you might have took the test early in the week. Friday comes around, and you might have got a negative. But who knows if you're asymptomatic and positive by the time Saturday Fright Night hits? Who knows?
I'm not sure. Well, they said they administered 1,200 tests for 300 people. I'm not sure if they, you know, did they test everyone four times? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure.
I'd like to know more about when the testing was, how often they did it. Were they testing right before they went on air? Because if so, then Joe Rogan's point is right. My point is, this is the challenge with all this stuff when people aren't tied into the same place, is you don't know what other people are going to do. You don't know how they're going to move. You know, it's like somebody I know invited me to help them doing some work and, you know, come through and help them with some video work. And I was like,
nah. Now? This happened now?
Yes. I'll tell you more about this. Off the show. I'll tell you about this.
Really?
Okay. And I was like,
if it's somebody that I don't like, that I'm not like that tight with, then I probably would have do it. There are a few people that I'll go to their house right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But it kind of is my hesitancy on that. And my other thing is, I don't know what you've been doing. If I'm tight with you, I might know what you've been doing. Like, if you're family, I may have an idea of where you've been going, what you've been doing.
Like, you know me. I'm just, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just here.
I love you, but I still ain't coming to your house.
No, I wouldn't because my
Because it's irresponsible. Then my point is I'm caring about other people. It's irresponsible for me to do that. So,
So all in all, the event itself was interesting. I think we're going to see the fallout from this, but look, they have another one Wednesday, another one Saturday. I'm going to watch them. But as far as like the actual fighting, the no fans thing was very interesting. And the fight card itself was very, very good. But as far as like, you know, the COVID-19 stuff, I think the UFC could also operate in a way that team sports can't, because this is one-on-one fighting. Right. You know, WWE, the action is a little bit different and they're still operating. So I think those sort of things in boxing, even if they decide to come back at some point, which Bob Arum says in June, he'll probably start announcing dates. Like they can move in a way that football, basketball, the NHL, you know, college sports, like they just simply can't do. Like, I think what we'll start, like tennis and golf are going to
they're going to sort of lead the way because you can social distance better.
Yeah.
You can control tests better.
All those non-team sports, I think there's a way you could do this that's mostly safe.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm not going to kill the UFC for doing what they did. Probably a little more aggressive for my liking for doing it in May. But at the same time, it's like, look, at some point, somebody was going to be first. And at some point, somebody was going to try and get this money. And look, fighters want to get paid. People want to work. Like, a lot of people want to work right now because a lot of people are getting tired of being home.
I'm going to say this. I respect what the fighters and everybody does in UFC and some degrees of wrestlers and stuff. I'm not sure I want to grab up on anybody. I don't know. Unless I know for sure that they're positive. I want to be grabbing up wrestling and...
Negative, you mean.
Negative, excuse me. Yeah. I definitely don't want if they're positive. But I'm not necessarily sure
if,
I want to do that.
Again, if everyone tested negative, like, yo, if I was going to have a fight and everyone on that side tested negative and everyone on our side tested negative, then it is what it is. Because at that point, it's like, yo, the other thing about this is like these men and women are fighters for a living.
Yeah.
This virus ain't scaring them. You know what I'm saying? Like Henry Cejudo's over here saying in the pre-fight video, he's like, you better hope you get that coronavirus because I'm coming for your ass, Dominic Cruz.
Damn.
You know what I mean? Like, this is a different world. And by the way, that's something that I would tell somebody if I were a fighter.
I'm sure that you would. We are sure that you would.
So it is what it is.
It is what it is. All right. My one time for your mind this week comes from the world of hip hop. Shout out to Joey Badass.
Oh, yes.
Brooklyn. Flatbush.
One of our favorites in the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast.
One of my favorite rappers out there. And Joey Badass did something that I've been saying for quite some time. If anybody knows me about the way I like albums, the way I generally like music, I don't care for long albums. Don't give me these 20-track albums. I still dare anybody to tell me a 20-track album that's a classic. Maybe you're talking about Only Built for Cuban Links, and even that I still think is a little bit too long.
Maybe a Book of Ryan, but it's a very short list.
And I like Book of Ryan, but I might have chopped a couple songs off of it. That would have
agreed. Well, that's the other thing. Yeah.
Joey Badass voices disdain for albums of more than 14 songs. This was in a Complex interview that was published on May 5th, and he answered a question about what to expect on his next project. And you know, the pro rapper said that the less is more approach is the way it should be. When it comes to making an LP, he said, quote, the thing with this project is everyone's going to be satisfied and not in a way where it's too many things on the menu. I'm definitely not that type. You come to my restaurant, MF-er, it's like 10 options. I hate when MF-ers put out an album longer than 14 songs. Nobody wants to effing listen to that. Word. Ain't nobody trying to listen to that. Ain't nobody want that.
He got albums that's more than 14. I mean, he's evolving though, so I get it. Like, you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, his first album was 15. Correct?
Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, again, he's still developing. Like, he's 25. You know what I mean? He's not going to think the way he was at 22, so I respect it.
He said, he doubled down on his point, and he said, nobody's getting through that in a day, Joey said of lengthy albums. I agree. Granted, kids are a big part of this shit, but bro, keep that shit to your point about if he's evolving. I don't care if it was Michael Jackson. I'm not listening to 25 songs. Less is more, in my opinion. I completely agree.
Gonna come out of retirement to drop this track.
I couldn't agree more at all whatsoever. Remember his last album, 12 songs. Very tight. Liked all it. Good. He did have over
four. Every song
he did
much.
Have over 14 on before the money that was 15 cuts on that. And 1999 did have 15 songs. Summer Nights had 17. But I think he's evolving. I like tighter albums. I've always said for that. I'm glad Joey is a young artist who I believe is 25. And that's Joey's age. 25. I'm really excited to see what he does with this next album. Some of the stuff I've heard has been pretty good. But I like that he's trying to keep tighter albums, thinking about the projects that he does. I mean, a lot of my favorite classic albums are tight albums, man.
Illmatic. Like,
you know what I mean? Illmatic, Good Kid, Mad City. You know, you look at these albums. You know, I know To Pimp a Butterfly pushed it with 16. There's some rare ones where it can go a little bit over 14, and I won't be too crazy. But generally, I like my albums 12 to 14 tracks. Give me your 12 to 14 best songs, and that's it.
You know, then 15 tracks.
15 tracks.
But 14 with an intro.
With an intro.
So
yes.
It's 14 tracks.
With 14 really. Tracks. Yes. Yeah. Another good example. You know what? Somebody who I think of an album that I was listening to a couple years back, and I was like, man, this album's really going good, but I was nervous about it at first. Drake's last album, the Scorpion album, which is his double album, which I just wish everybody in hip hop would just stop trying. Like, there hasn't been a really good one since Life After Death. So just like everybody,
the double
please,
album.
Yeah, please just stop.
You don't like Street Disciple?
It was mediocre.
So you could have left it on one disc. I know.
Could have. Same. I'd say the same thing for Jay-Z's Blueprint too. Could have left it on one disc.
Oh, that album.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I like, there are songs I really like on that album, but yeah, there's a lot of songs.
It's just way too long, though.
Too long. Same thing with Street Disciples. Street Disciples are songs that I really, really like. And there's songs that I'm like, I will never listen to that again. It's automatic skip. But I was talking about Drake. Drake had the Scorpion album. I liked the first side of the album. I thought his rapping was actually tighter, some of the best that he had done. I wish he had just left that as an album. I think if he left that as an album, a lot of people would herald it as a great album. But he gave us all the stuff we didn't need on the second side. And stop. Please. Could we stop? Just stop with the long albums. I'm glad to see somebody who's 25 years old, like Joey Badass, understand sometimes less is more. Because, you know, a lot of times the old heads, not that I'm in that category yet, be hating on the young heads, you know, out there and saying that they don't know this. And I'm like, no, I like that Joey's thinking about how his project should be. I like that he's thinking about his themes and how tight he wants to keep it. Like, yes, man. Damn. I want the music. And he's right. Ain't nobody got time for that. I don't got time for 25 track albums.
Yeah, because after I'm done with your 25 track album, I gotta listen to somebody else's 25 track album. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm just not gonna devote all that time to you. That's why I think what Chris Brown is doing is stupid, but it is what it is. He's playing a different game.
He puts out like 40 track albums. And I'll be honest, ever since Chris Brown started doing that, I haven't listened to an album. I see the track list, 39, 38, 40 tracks. Nope.
But I see that Griselda, and I see like 13. You know what I mean? That's right there in the sweet spot. And usually when it comes to like the underground rappers, especially Freddie Gibbs, Griselda, when they're dropping 15, 13 or whatever, one or two is a skit. So it's really a little bit less than that. Yeah. And I think with Joey Badass' next album, he's probably going to give us 14 songs, one intro and 13 records or something like that. He might even do 10. 10 to 12 is like perfect. You know what I mean? Get in and get out, 35, 40 minutes of music, and I'm good with that. 35 to 45 is perfect minutes of music.
I'm completely with him. I'm looking forward to his new album, as I said. Shout out to Joey Badass for keeping it real and actually caring about his projects. That's what we need more of. All right, that's it for this episode of the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. Please remember, support us, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, be sure to subscribe to Backpack Broadcasting on YouTube for much of the great content that we have coming out. We have more coming up in our Back to the Future series. If you missed that, go back and check that. Great Nerd Out basketball discussion. Also, we'll have another edition coming up soon of our face-off series, Player A versus Player B, coming up as we plan to do more of those. There's been some good receptions to those. I'm glad people are liking it. Please continue to support that. We might try to do different stuff with other people. Who knows? Maybe even outside of sports, comparing, looking at different things. There's a whole bunch of ways we can go with this. So we're going to have fun with that. But please be sure to support, share, check out our T Public store. There was a flash sale this week. Shirts low, $13. Everything discounted. Be sure to check that out. Get some good Backpack Broadcasting merchandise. You know, continue to support us. Support the podcast. That is it, again, for this episode. For my man, Brian Fonseca, our guest that we had on at the top of this, Benjamin Couch from the NBA. I'm Dexter Henry. Until next time, y'all. Peace.